Let's go ahead and continue in our story about Samson the judge. We are in Judges chapter 16, and we're going to start at verse number 15 in just a moment. Remember that we are looking at the relationship that Samson developed with another woman, a Philistine woman apparently, who was living very close to that border region that he grew up in and where he is functioning as the military barrier between the Philistines and the Judean and Danite territories that the Philistines had been invading before Samson came on the scene. Delilah has been offered a huge amount of silver if she will just turn her boyfriend over to the Philistine authorities. But she can't do that unless she figures out the means of his supernatural power. So she has developed this pattern of asking him where his power lies, and then using his answer in some sort of sex play game that, if it works, then her Philistine associates are going to jump out and grab him. But if it doesn't work, then she will just accuse him of not trusting her, of not really loving her. So this has happened several times now. The most recent was that he told her if somebody would just weave his seven long braids into a loom, that's what would take away his strength. And so she did that and yelled for him to wake up. The Philistines were here, and he immediately woke up and ripped the stuff off of his head. And so that clearly was not the source of his strength. So verse 15 is her response. And this is very reminiscent of what happened 20 years earlier when his Philistine wife, back at that time, he was actually involved in the honeymoon ceremonies during that week of his marriage. His wife of that time was threatened by Philistines to give them the answer of his riddle. And so she tried, and he wouldn't answer her. And so she turned on the tears and begged him and pleaded with him until finally he gave up and gave her the answer, and it was used against him. Well, here's what she does. Here's what Delilah does on this most recent episode of him not sharing the truth with her. Verse 15, she said to him, "How can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You've mocked me these three times, and you've not told me where your great strength lies." So she pulls out the "you don't love me" accusation, which it's hard to tell. Did he really love her, or was he just infatuated with her? And I would suggest that probably the latter is the truth, that he was simply a man drug along by his physical desires. And she clearly was not in love with him because she's betrayed him for several hundreds of thousands, maybe even upwards of $1 million worth of value. So verse 16 reports that when she pressed him hard with her words day after day and urged him, his soul was vexed to death. So she is telling him over and over again, "You don't love me. You don't care about me. This is not a real relationship because you keep secrets from me." And she goes on in that way until finally he is sick to death of it. And he figures that just telling her the truth would be sufficient. So he told her all his heart, verse 17 says, and said to her, "A razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb." And you remember this is true. God directed through the angel that Samson's mother, from the moment she conceived, would refrain from anything from the vine or any type of strong drink, and that once he was born, she would raise him with those same rules of special dedication to God. And he's followed them for the most part, apparently most of his life. There were some episodes we talked about earlier that he seems to have fiddle-faddled with them. But the one that he has never broken is he's never cut his hair. So here he is, very close to his 40th birthday, it would appear. And he's never cut his hair, and he has these 7 long braids. He tells her, "If my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me, and I will become weak and like any other man." Now, is he assuming this? Is he saying this because that's what he's been told, either by his parents or by God himself? It would appear that even after he does lose his hair, he thinks he should still have supernatural strength. So he shares with her what he suspects is the source of his strength. Verse 18, when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, so she senses he's being absolutely genuine with her, she sent and called the lords of the Philistines, saying, "Come up again, for he has told me all his heart." So the lords of the Philistines came up to her and brought the money in their hands. Remember, it's about 5,500 pieces of silver, weighted pieces of silver. If it's shekel weight, then we double that up for day's wage. So we're talking about 1,100 day's wages, a lot of value here. And then she made him sleep on her knees. So we're back to kind of that sex play again. And she called a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his head. And then she began to torment him, meaning she started smacking on him and yelling that, you know, the Philistines are here. In fact, it says that next. She said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." So that's the sex play that's been going on with all this other stuff. It's a little bit of bondage. And in this case, the cutting of his hair while he slept. And his strength left him. Now he awoke from his sleep and said to himself, "I will go out as at other times and shake myself free," because apparently he's tied up. But he did not know. He did not realize that he who is had left him. So he's played around one too many times with his responsibility to serve God. Samson is one of the most problematic figures amongst the judges. And I want to share with you the absolute sense that I have of this, that he is a saved man. He's mentioned in the book of Hebrews, chapter number 11, as a hero. And it's because of his use by God to keep the Philistines at bay during this very important period in Israeli history. Because God is basically getting things ready for Samuel, who's in the wings right now, and then after that, Saul, And then after that, David. So God is trying to prep for a transition into the kingdom period. And Samson is going to be used to keep the Philistines from screwing that plan up. But he is problematic in the way that he lives his life. He is a very carnal sort of person. And in this case, he thought that God would still give him supernatural ability even when he violated the last aspect of his Nazirite vow. And he was wrong. Verse 21, the Philistines seized him. So they were able to grab him like they would any other person. They overwhelmed him with power and tied him up. And then they gouged out his eyes. So they either poked them out or they burned them out. And he is now permanently blinded. And then they brought him down to Gaza. And they put him or bound him with bronze shackles. And he ground at the mill in the prison. So he is now a prisoner of the city of Gaza. And they use him for physical labor. They chain him up like they would a donkey to a grinding turnstile. A great big grinding stone at the center. And he's tied up or shackled to this bar that comes out from the grinding stone, and he just walks around in a circle, grinding the grain like some sort of beast of burden all day long as they need it, providing flour for the workers and the occupants of this prison. Some of the prisoners are probably non-compliant Israelis. And this is his life now for the next several weeks, probably a few months. He has plenty of time to think about how he came to this. And the answer is he came to this because he did not take his Nazirite vow seriously. Verse 22. But the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. So he's starting to get his hair back. Verse 23, now the lords of the Philistines gathered to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to rejoice, and said, our God has given Samson, our enemy, into our hands. So the five lords of the Philistines come to Gaza to celebrate their god Dagon, who's related into the pantheon of the gods of the Canaanites. Now, the Philistines are actually not Canaanites by genetic. They have moved in a couple of waves of migration out of the Aegean Sea area, out of the Greek Isle area. So they are Japhethites, whereas the Canaanites are from the son of Ham, or the son of Noah. So the Philistines are kind of new arrivals, so to speak, that are taking on a lot of the worship customs of the original nation in which they occupy. So Dagon, they believe, has given them victory over Samson and the God of the Israelis, He who is, Yahweh. So they're going to have a great big party at Gaza. And during this party, they decide it would be great to make a mockery of the man that has caused them a lot of trouble for the past 20 years. So verse 24, when the people saw Samson, they praised their God. the god Dagon. And they said, our God has given our enemy into our hand, the ravager of our country, who has killed many of us. And when their hearts were merry, they said, call Samson that he may entertain us. So they want Samson to come out into the main portion of this facility that is dedicated to the god Dagon. And that's where they'll probably play a little blind man's buff or keep away or something like that to make fun of the fact that he has no supernatural strength and he has no eyesight. So they made him stand between two pillars. And Samson said to the young man who held him by the hand, let me feel the pillars on which the house rests, that I may lean against them. Now, this is hard for us to get our minds wrapped around because we don't know exactly the architectural construction of this temple of Dagon. But it would appear that there was like a central assembly area, which was then surrounded by multiple levels of seating areas or areas for gathering, and that the central area, probably near where the god was displayed, that is where the idol was displayed, had some supporting pillars that were close to one another. And it's these pillars that Samson wants to be near. So he asks the guy that acts as his guide, because he's blind, remember, let me lean up against the supporting pillars. So the house, according to verse 27, was full of men and women. And all the lords of the Philistines were there. And on the roof, there were about 3,000 men and women who looked on while Samson entertained. So up on the very top level, and we don't know how many levels there were, but up on the top level, there's at least 3,000. Samson called to he who is and said, oh, my master, he who is, please remember me. Please strengthen me once more, O God, that I may be avenged on the Philistines for my two eyes. Now, we have to make the comment here that Samson is still making this about himself. He wants to get vengeance for what the Philistines did to him. Remember, that's how his life has been, apparently. The Philistines do something to him, he does something worse back to them. They do something worse to him, he does something even stronger against them. And it's been back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. God has used this to break the Philistine power, but Samson has been very egocentric in this. So his prayer is also egocentric. So Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the house rested. And that tells you how close they are to one another. These pillars are within 6 feet of one another. Because the normal span of an average-sized guy, when he stretches his arms out, is going to be about 6 feet or so. So these pillars are within that range. So he puts his hands up against these pillars. He leaned his weight against them, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other. And then Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. So he must have felt that familiar supernatural empowerment to his muscles as he's pushing his palms against these closely spaced supporting pillars. And he decides, I'm going to bring the whole place down. And I'll talk about the architecture in just a moment that must have allowed this. So he bowed with all his strength. So he gets down, you know, bends down a little bit and puts his muscle into it. And the house fell upon the lords and upon all the people who were in it. So the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those whom he killed during his life. So these pillars must have been supporting cross pillars above them, or cross beams above them, in such a way that shoving these two apart begins a domino-like collapse at one end of the interior of this complex. And once this particular little section collapses, it allows the sections to each side and above to collapse, which then causes the next section beyond them to collapse, which causes the next section beyond them to collapse, so that the whole structure comes down within a matter of moments on top of all of the people. And the people up on the top structure, they're, of course, falling with collapsing material. And he ends up killing thousands upon thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of people in the collapse of this temple. And I want you to keep in mind that this was a religious location. This was a shrine complex, because that's going to play into where we go next when we return to the book of Samuel. So let's wrap up, though, with Samson. His brothers and all his family came down and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol in the tomb of Manoah, his father. He had judged Israel 20 years. So some Israelis come down, some Danites, his family, come down to the collapsed ruins, and they help dig through until they find his body, and they take it home and give it a proper burial. Since he started his ministry as a judge, probably when he was 18, 19, or 20, then that means 20 years later, he must have been just somewhere shy of his 40th birthday when he dies. So he is a young man still when he commits this last act of assault against the Philistine peoples. He kills all five of the Philistine lords. So he has an overturning of the administration of the entire Philistine government because of what he does here. I want you to go to 1 Samuel chapter number 4 next. 1 Samuel chapter number 4. Remember that Samuel and Samson are roughly the same age. So Samuel must be somewhere close to his 40th birthday as well. For the last 20 plus years, perhaps as many as 30 years, he has been functioning as a prophet at the tabernacle at Shiloh, which is about a day's journey to the northeast of where Samson has been. And he has not been a military leader. He has been a religious leader. He has been upholding the goodness of God during the horrible priesthood of Eli and Hophni and Phinehas. And now they are about to have a great crisis come upon them. I believe that we're talking about the year 1056 BC. Now let's try that one more time. 1057 BC. That's my approximation for the time period here, and it fits into the chronology that comes up next in the stories of Samuel. Samson is recently dead, and he has destroyed the Philistine place of worship, taking out the Philistine five heads of government. And what would the Philistines want to do other than get revenge? Because that's been their pattern with Samson. And so what would be the perfect revenge of the Philistines? To kill off the religious leaders and to destroy the religious location of the Israelites, because Samson was an Israeli. And that's exactly what we see them setting up for at the beginning of 1 Samuel chapter 4. So let's set up our place for next time we get together by reading a little bit here. The word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out to battle against the Philistines. They encamped at Ebenezer, and the Philistines camped at Aphek. Now when you chase down the location of Aphek, it is on the breakpoint between the plain of the Mediterranean on the west. It's just north of Philistine territories. And Aphek is the entry point into the trade route, into the Wadi travel road that goes up to the hill country where Shiloh is located. So the Philistines are on their way to Shiloh. And that's where we'll take up the story tomorrow.